This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we're talking with the biographers of two early feminists. My guest Barbara Goldsmith has written a new book about Victoria Woodhull, who in 1872 became the first woman to run for president. She was described in the press as the prostitute who ran for president and as Mrs. Satan. She was also controversial within the women's movement because of her emphasis on free love and spiritualism. In fact, Goldsmith says the most interesting discovery she turned up in her research was the extent to which spiritualism and the inception of women's rights were intertwined. Spiritualism was a popular movement of about 10 million people by the end of the Civil War. Spiritualists believed in the power to see into the future and to communicate with the dead, powers Woodhull claimed to have. I asked Barbara Goldsmith about the connection Woodhull made between spiritualism and feminism.
One has to remember that in a year, say 1848, women had absolutely no power in the real world. They couldn't vote, but more than that, they couldn't own property. If they divorced, they couldn't have custody of their children. Their husbands or fathers were allowed to beat them and physically abuse them. Certain states even stipulated the size of the instruments that could be used to inflict punishment. And they were not allowed to speak in what you called promiscuous assemblies, which meant men and women together. So if they could speak with the dead, great people like Shakespeare or Aristotle or Demosthenes, and they could convey their thoughts at conventions, then they were empowered. And I think it was all about empowerment. Women who had no power were now empowered. They had other powers, and that's the title of my book.
But this was pretty controversial among feminists, wasn't it? Victoria Woodhull's claim to have these clairvoyant powers. A lot of people considered her a crank.
No, it wasn't that that was so controversial in the women's movement. It was more her sexual views that were controversial.
What were her views about what she described as free love, and how did they come into conflict with the morals of the time?
Free love, it sounds like something scandalous even today, but what Victoria meant by free love was easier divorce laws. You could only divorce for if you were a woman, if you caught your husband in adultery. A man could divorce for any reason if he wished a divorce. She thought that was unfair. She thought the whole sexual standard where men could do anything they wanted sexually, but women were supposed to be pure and virginal. A man wouldn't marry a woman in the middle class or the upper middle white class if she weren't a virgin. It was very primitive, and she believed in equal standards for men and women. And she said, you know, why do you arrest prostitutes? Why don't you arrest the men who visit them if you're going to arrest them? They're equally culpable. Why do you put on trial a woman who's had an illegitimate child and the child has died because they weren't properly cared for, and you don't put her seducer on trial?
Well, she had two marriages, Victoria Woodhull. Her first husband she married when she was age 15. She wanted to escape from her family. That was a pretty bad marriage, which she got out of. And her second marriage was to James Harvey Blood, and they both believed in free love. So tell us a little bit about how her marriages contributed to her views about relationships.
Victoria Woodhull came from the worst kind of background. Her father was a con man and a thief. He put her in his carnival show when she was a little tot of six. He billed her out as a clairvoyant. He didn't know that she was a clairvoyant. When she started manifesting, quote, other powers, unquote, he was very surprised. And her mother was a religious fanatic, illegitimate, and illiterate. She was one of eight children. And she really married her first husband, who was an alcoholic doctor, in order to escape from this squalid, terrible family life. And she escaped into a life that was almost as bad. He was so drunk when he delivered her first child that the baby almost bled to death. She finally went to San Francisco. It was in gold rush times, but she didn't make much money because there wasn't much for her. So she became an actress and a kind of casual prostitute. And she really suffered. When she finally made some money and finally hit it rich, so to speak, in a financial disaster in America known as Black Friday, she vowed that she would use this money so that other women would not have to suffer the way she did.
How did she manage to become rich on Black Friday when everybody who was invested in the stock market lost their money?
She had met Commodore Vanderbilt. And as it turned out, Commodore Vanderbilt was also an ardent spiritualist. And in a trance, she told him that when gold reaches 150, sell it short. So gold reached 150. He sold it and made millions and millions of dollars, gave her $700,000, which today would be like, perhaps $12 million. And where did she get her information? She said she got it directly from the spirits. But one must remember that she had been a prostitute, and she had access to every house of prostitution in New York through her father, who sold notions in those houses. And the most powerful men, certainly the ones that were manipulating the gold market, would have dinner at Delmonico's, they'd have a brandy and a cigar, and they'd go to those houses. And they would think that the women that occupied their beds were just insensate creatures. So where did she get her information? You make up your own mind.
What a life.
What a life.
Now, Victoria Woodhull has many firsts to her name. Among the most important is that in 1872, she became the first woman to run for president on an independent party, the People's Party. What did she stand for?
Victoria Woodhull stood for what she called universal suffrage, which meant equal rights for everyone, equal rights to sexually equal pay, equal in every way for all people. Her running mate was Frederick Douglass, who was a great black activist. It meant equal rights for black people, who, one must remember, were only really freed by the 13th Amendment, not the Emancipation Proclamation, after the Civil War. And so she was for total freedom and autonomy and very little government control. And her party was actually called the Equal Rights Party.
Was I wrong in saying it was the People's Party?
No, it was the name was changed. It was first the People's Party and then changed to the Equal Rights Party.
She was called, when she was running, the prostitute who ran for president. You described her as a casual prostitute. What does a casual prostitute mean?
That means that when she had to support an alcoholic husband and she had to support a second child and her daughter, that she made money any way she could. She sewed, she became an actress, and she was a cigar girl in a bar. And if she spent the night with somebody who would give her $20 or a $50 gold piece, that was all right. She said later, if I use my body for my cause, don't blame me. Later, I tried to free all women when I could.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Barbara Goldsmith. She's written a new biography of Victoria Woodhull. It's called Other Powers, The Age of Suffrage, Spiritualism, and the Scandalous Victoria Woodhull. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk more about this 19th century feminist. This is Fresh Air. Back with Barbara Goldsmith, the author of a new biography of Victoria Woodhull called Other Powers, The Age of Suffrage, Spiritualism, and the Scandalous Victoria Woodhull. When Victoria Woodhull ran for president, an independent party, in 1872, what was the reaction of the other leading women's rights activists of the time?
She just split the movement in two as if she'd just taken an axe and put it down the middle. She was aligned with people like Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who said, let's defeat the 15th Amendment to the Constitution, which gave black men the vote, unless they give women the vote at the same time. And the Bostonians and the rest of the women's movement, typified by someone like Lucy Stone in Boston, said, wait a minute, we're all in a terrible situation. And Lucy Stone said, if anyone can get out of this terrible pit, let them go, I will support them, unquote. And so this schism between who should get the vote, who should be enfranchised, just split the party. And also the Bostonians, who were extremely proper, didn't want anything to do with this free lover, head of this cult of free love, as they called it.
Now, Susan B. Anthony didn't really like Victoria Woodhull, I thought, didn't really support her views.
Susan B. Anthony did a total flip. At first, she was all for Victoria, and she said, go forward, bright spirit. And she said she's brought new life to the women's movement. But then, Victoria, in order to make money, used her old carny tactics. She began to blackmail people who she found out had sexual liaisons that were improper. And this made Susan B. Anthony totally turn against her. And Anthony said, she's like the horsefly. She wants blood. She says, gimme, gimme. And it really offended this stately Quaker girl who had such high morals.
So did Victoria Woodhull get any votes?
No. At the time that she ran for president, first, women couldn't vote. And I believe only women and a few of the radical Republicans in Congress would have voted for her. But she was in jail on a charge of printing pornography because just as she had blackmailed these women, she tried to blackmail the most famous preacher in America, Henry Ward Beecher, into supporting her. And when he wouldn't, she blew the whistle in her newspaper and said that he was having an affair, a very long standing, with his parishioner and the wife of his very best friend, who was a great abolitionist named Theodore Tilton. And as a result, Tilton sued Beecher for alienation of affection, and Victoria was thrown in jail. Her health was impaired. She was thrown in the tombs, and eventually she was driven out of the country in 1877.
So what was Victoria Woodhull's state when she died? What was her reputation? Did she have any money left? Did she have any power or credibility left?
She was like a cat with nine lives. She went to England. She started to lecture there, and the richest banker in England heard her lecture, fell madly in love with her, and after a while, he married her. Henry James wrote The Siege of London about Victoria persuading the family of John Bidulph Martin of Martin's Bank to marry her. And Nancy Hedway in Henry James's book says, I'm going to change everything. And she really gave up. She went for respectability, and she became the wife of this very prominent banker. She moved to a small village called Breedon's Norton, and she became an English matron, very, very wealthy. And she said she was really unfulfilled and unhappy, but comfortable for the rest of her life.
What are your final thoughts on Woodhull? Do you see her more as a kook, as a serious thinker? What do you see finally as her place within 19th century feminism?
Victoria Woodhull, I think, was the single most important person in feminism. They've tried to block her from the history books, but she was a woman 100 years ahead of her time. Almost everything we accept today was what she was for. A no-fault divorce, we accept that today. a woman having custody of her children, of course we accept that. We've gotten the vote as women. I can go on and on. And, you know, by the end of the book, I really knew Victoria so well. She was a woman who was really could have lived today and could have lived comfortably and successfully instead of being reviled and her speeches destroyed. And I'm so glad I was able, with this prodigious research, to recover all her letters, her speeches, her diaries. It took a long time, but my respect for her grew with every single piece of research I could find.
It's hard to see Victoria Woodhull as a conventional heroine in the sense that, okay, she not only fought for women's rights and for the right to vote, she also believed that she could predict the future and talk to the dead and channel the dead. She blackmailed some of her enemies. So how do you reconcile the women's rights work that she did with some of the more questionable claims that she made?
I don't reconcile anything. I just tried to present this larger-than-life woman the way she was. If I were writing fiction, they would say, this is impossible. It's impossible that this girl who was brought up with not 2 cents in squalor, starved, beaten, would eventually make the equivalent of millions of dollars, run for president of the United States, then marry the richest banker in England. I could not ever present a story like that. It happened. That's all I can tell you. It happened. And Victoria's belief in spiritualism came at a time when many, many women who were not at all cranks or faddists, perhaps many women like women today who believed that they wanted to see their dead children in the bosom of the Lord after a war where many, many people had been killed, wanted to know that they had not totally severed contact with these young men who had been so important. I mean, the Civil War was the bloodiest war America's ever known. We've never known a civil war like that. Those views that seem so strange today had very, very good rationales in their own day. And women felt that it empowered them in the society.
You went back to a lot of Victoria Woodhull's own writings. Would you like to leave us with an excerpt of something that she wrote?
Well, this is a very brief excerpt, and perhaps it will explain to you her belief in spiritualism, even though it's very short. I end the book in the following way. Perhaps what is true of Victoria Woodhull is that she was a woman before her time in a world that was not ready to receive her. Her soul, however, remains with us. A month before her death, she scrawled what might have been her epitaph. The deeper I delve for a sure footing, the higher I reach for light, the more convinced am I that only here and there do we find an instrument capable of responding to the hungry heart's desire for truth. On the retina of our brain, the outline of truth is revealed to those attuned to the music of the spheres. Therefore, I feel well assured that whatever the misrepresentations to which I may be subject, the events must be committed to time, who relentlessly unravels all distortions and rights all wrongs. Whoever I am and whatever I have done belongs to the spirits.
Barbara Goldsmith, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Barbara Goldsmith is the author of Other Powers, The Age of Suffrage, Spiritualism, and the Scandalous Victoria Woodhull. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.